Hello and welcome back to Nerds Amalgamated. I'm the Professor, my co-host is the DJ, and tonight's special guest is BPM.
Yep, the people of the net.
After how long have we been out of the podcast game for now? How long has it been?
Only a couple of years. So if you're still here from the last time we did this, thanks for sticking around. And if you're new, I hope you stick around.
Wow, what a journey it has been for the last few years. We had you are now a happily married man. I'm now a happily graduated student, and BPM over here, he's our new guy.
And maybe the last new guy you'll get.
it's like BPM's just foreshadowing the stuff that's gonna happen.
Well, I see everything is black. And possibly white on occasion.
You need to take your sunnies off.
But they're cool.
On a summer day, I don't blame BPM on that.
But it's also cooler to wear them at night.
Yeah.
Well, that was back in the 50s, wasn't it?
I thought it was the 60s.
No, that's an 80s song.
Okay.
Anyway, for tonight's episode, we have a recap of the Golden Globes, SAG-AFTRA's deal with AI, and magic as a science.
Which I disagree upon. Magic is not science.
Okay, so the Golden Globes was a thing the other day. I'll say this. That was a very, very interesting Golden Globes, might I add. Which one should we start with? Do you want me to start with the winners or the interesting moments that happened on the Golden Globes?
Or we always go with what's trending. With the whole chat of divorce between two certain peoples as decided by a lip reader or some shit.
Everyone was talking about that, but we'll talk about the moments then, okay? So the host for this year's Golden Globes was a guy by the name of Joe Coy, and he made some really, really iffy jokes that didn't fall well. Like, people were just stretching their collars and putting a very cringy face going, who wrote these jokes?
Maybe you should stick to OnlyFans.
Oh, no. Don't give him ideas. No. But,
I don't think his writers are going to be working with him again after he threw them under the bus.
Yeah, but he basically said, I didn't write these jokes to justify the poor reception. And some of those jokes were just, like he made a joke about the length of Oppenheimer, suggesting sarcastically that the nominated film could have gone for another hour or been a whole new series.
What is the point where a movie like that, one of these movies, like the other, one of the other nominees, Killers of the Flower Moon?
Yeah.
That's like 3 hours long. At what point does it become better for that to be a miniseries rather than a movie?
I think that the thing with having a whole four length movie versus a miniseries, it's kind of like, at least it keeps the pacing of the movie going and the flow of the movie going. A miniseries just breaks it down and just disrupts the flow of the entire thing. And plus,
wasn't that movie about someone creates a bomb, then the world gets destroyed by said bomb, or will be destroyed by said bombs?
Yeah, that's the basic gist of it. Yeah,
yes, based on a true story, Zoomers.
What else happened on that? What else happened on the? What were the other moments? Oh yeah, Macaulay Culkin's brother won the best male performance for his movie. For its TV series in Succession. And his acceptance speech went like this. I was nominated for Golden Globes 20 years ago, and that moment passed. I sort of remember thinking, I'm never going back to this room ever again, which was fine, whatever. But thanks to Succession, I've been here a couple of times, which is nice. But I sort of accepted, I'm never going to be on stage, so this is a nice moment, thank you. And he ended his speech by taunting his fellow nominee, Pedro Pascal, joking, suck it, Pedro.
So I take it those aren't the two getting divorced?
No. The two getting divorced was, what was it? It was Timothy Chalamet and someone else. Hang on a second.
I had no idea Timothée Chalamet was even married.
Here we go. Timothée Chalamet. It was Kylie Jenner and Timothée Chalamet there in a relationship. And
oh, no, I remember that now.
So I did see a story about lip readers trying to translate it, but I didn't see the whole report about it. Hang on a second. Oh yeah, here we go. Cosmopolitan did an article about this, and so according to Jeremy Freeman, who chatted with Page Six, Timmy kicked off by telling Jakali, "You're amazing." She then complimented his necklace by saying it was nice, and then he loved it as well. Kylie then dropped, "I love you," and Timothy joked, "I really care about you." At this point, Kylie teased, saying, "I don't really care about you. I really love someone else." They shared some kisses, so basically the vibe was flirty. Glad that we settled that saga. That was it.
Hot news. Net's going to love that.
But but what's interesting is the awards have been won this year. That's been going out this year. So for this year's Golden Globes, they've added two new categories. But two, I tell this year. One's called Cinematic and Box Office Achievement, which is basically a category for films that grossed at least $100 million domestically and $150 million worldwide. And Best Performance in Stand-Up Comedy on Television, also known as Best Stand-Up Comedian on Television. So, Best Picture went to Oppenheimer. Best Musical or Comedy went to Poor Things. Miyazaki's The Boy and the Heron won Best Animated. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, I don't know how anyone could think that Miyazaki wasn't going to win. I haven't seen it, but he's so loved that is there anyone else who could have possibly knocked him off his perch there?
Is that pun intended or not pun intended?
You're right, we're talking about birds. Unintended.
But I don't know. Let me check the nominees. I mean, it's... Hang on a second. For the nominees, there's been some interesting nominees. So you have Elemental, which is a Pixar animation and Walt Disney production. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. The Super Mario Bros. Movie. Suzume. And Wish. So very stiff competition.
Oh, I heard that Wish is going to fail because it's Disney.
Yeah. Oh, I've heard some interesting things about that movie as well. But
well, it's Disney, so it's just going to be safe. They're not going to do anything that is going to upset anyone or push the boundaries.
As South Park said, the pandering stone is real within Disney. Yes, I watched that episode.
Oh. Okay, so let's keep going. So, best Cillian Murphy as Oppenheimer won the award for best actor. Lily Gladstone, Killers of the Flower Moon, won best actress. Paul Giamatti from The Holdovers won best actor in musical comedy. Emma Stone won best actress. Robert Downey Jr. won best supporting actor for Oppenheimer. Divine Joy Randolph in The Holdovers as supporting actress in a comedy. Nolan won best director. Best TV.
Nolan.
Yeah. This is his first, mind you, this is his first Golden Globes Award.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought he would have won a few more.
Yeah. Best TV series. So best drama went to Succession. Best comedy went to The Bear. Limited series.
All right. Let's not just read out the whole thing, or we'll be here all night.
Oh no! I'm nearly done. So what else?
Can't forget Barbie.
Oh yeah! Oh yeah! That actually won the best cinematic and box office achievement award. And best stand-up comedian went to Ricky Gervais.
Well, he's better than Mr. Coy.
Hey! But yeah, interesting. This is very interesting how Oppenheimer's been winning the awards. So, and the interesting part is this is the start of the road to the Oscars. I had to put that there.
That is fair. We got to put the sad horn with the fail of the comedian.
Yeah. But what do you reckon, guys? You reckon Oppenheimer can...
Don't make me take this soundboard away from you.
Okay, what do you guys reckon, though? You reckon Oppenheimer could win the Oscars, or you reckon Barbie could be the runaway horse?
Never know. Roll a dice and see what happens. That's what I say. Never know, because they could both get wasted by some other random thing. Maybe the new Avatar movie. So not, though.
Oh, Jesus. Another Avatar movie. Oh, boy.
They just should have stopped at number one.
Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Okay, so I'm flipping a coin. Heads is for Barbie, tails is for Oppenheimer. And okay. The coin says that Oppenheimer will win the Oscar.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm gonna put that on the record. Okay, so Oppenheimer to win the Oscar, for according to the professor. What about you, BPM? What's your bet? Who you reckon will win it? You reckon Oppenheimer will win the Oscar, or some other movie might take it?
To be honest, I'm not quite sure. Right. I say take a chance, see what happens, and if it works, it works. It bombs. There's always next year.
All right. I'll also take Oppenheimer, because it's Christopher Nolan. I mean, damn. But yeah, okay. I'm putting my money's on Oppenheimer as well. For it to win it. Yeah, but what's also interesting with this year's Golden Globes is they've managed to survive through the bitterest of events that happened the last year, which was like the SAG-AFTRA strikes, for example, and how it was how a lot of people were thought like, oh, this could be the death of TV, this could be the death of movies and whatnot, and here we are.
Maybe we'd all go outside and do something with our lives.
That's fair. But yeah, anyways, we should move along. I mean, the Golden Globes, like I said, it's the road to the Oscars has begun. Golden Globes, here we are. But yeah.
I know, Deadpool might come and bowl them all over.
Oh, I could totally picture it now. Ryan Reynolds going up to stage and slapping someone like Will Smith did to Chris Rock.
Unless he survives his current melee against Disney.
So anyway, moving on to the SAG-AFTRA. They've now made a deal with an Australian company, Replica AI, to allow them to record voices and then reproduce them using their AI, which every bloody thing is called AI now. And I hate it. Not all of this is AI. When am I going to be able to tell my AI to go and cook dinner for me? And it does that. I want a robot that's going to go and cook dinner for me. And I'll clean my house.
They are working on the robot wives.
Oh, wait. So are we actually going to get the real Stepford Wives?
Maybe.
Oh, my gosh. If that actually happens.
Well, there's rumors along the pits of hell known as the net that marriage between AI and humans is going to be a thing.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Bring on Cyberpunk 2027.
Oh, no!
Or should I say Blade Runner?
Oh, boy.
Well, Blade Runner doesn't seem so bad when you think about it. Sure, the world is dying, and we've got huge inequality, but there's Japanese food on every corner.
Oh, yeah, that works. It's always the best food.
How can you say no to a good bowl of ramen?
This is true. If it's a good bowl of ramen.
So, anyway, this shouldn't be called AI. It should be called Spicy Text-to-Speech.
Didn't they try that before back in the day with the AI girlfriend app type shit?
Oh, you mean the one that's coming, that's out right now? The AI?
No, I mean the one before that.
Wait, there's one before. Which
they
one?
They tried it, and during the pandemic, one company tried to abuse their app for sexual fantasy with AI.
Yeah, I saw a YouTuber do a video on that.
Mm.
And they were talking about how if you want it to do anything with you, it is very insistent on you giving it money. And I think it was actually called Replica with a K,
yeah.
Which is a funny coincidence because this story is about Replica Studios with a C.
Maybe it's not an American company since they spell it correctly. I'm kidding.
So this deal that they've made will allow Replica Studios to create digital voice replicas for use in the gaming industry.
I think that is a problem with all the voice actors.
The voice actors are not happy.
No,
they want to know who actually negotiated this, because as far as the voice actors are aware, nobody came to them.
Oh, you just can, they'll just blame Matt Mercer.
Oh, no.
Well, that guy already does so many roles. It's not like they can actually, you know, they could replace him with AI, and that would already cut out about 90% of the industry.
He is the master of his craft. I respect him immensely as a D&D fanboy since God knows when.
I'm going to say this, okay? It's no secret that AI is going to be... What am I saying? AI
is already a thing.
Yeah, it's already a thing, and it's swamping every aspect of our lives. Like
you got the AI art problem. You got the AI music, which is all heading. I don't think a very, very dark path. Hmm. Where's about all the people they steal it from? You know, the royalties need to be respected.
Yeah. So. This deal appears to give a way for the actors to license out their voice and receive payments for the use of their voice, even if they aren't physically there recording the lines.
Yeah, but you know, companies are too greedy for that type of human dignity.
Yeah. It's,
so what's interesting about this to me, even though AI is super powerful and the companies are using it, what's really, really interesting is that the union that fought against this has basically went back and said, hey,
it's fine.
Yeah, that's
it's fine. Everything's fine. I got a big paycheck, so I'm fine with this now.
and here the interesting part is, as soon as Afra released the deal about this, okay, as soon as Afra released the deal, SAG-AFTRA released this news on Twitter. People were up at arms about this. And I'm looking at their tweet right now. So far, there has been 5,764 quote tweets and 1,305 likes.
I'm glad we're all still calling it a tweet.
Sounds a bit adult. Though, again, the whole thing with what Twitter/X has become now is just a runway for cyberbullying.
Yeah. But okay.
Elon Musk, and tweet is so much better than an excretion.
I don't know about that. You actually feel relief after an excretion, whereas the tweet, you just feel more and more bad.
Okay. So I'm looking at the quote tweets right now. So let me read a couple of quote tweets. So Yong Ye, for example, has basically said this: SAG-AFTRA approved by affected members of the voice union's voiceover performer community. Literally, every working voice actor. We did not approve this.
That definitely seems to be how it's gone.
Yeah. So Nick Atlas, a voice actor, went, I cannot tell you the amount of times clients have come to me needing me to replace an AI dub for a commercial because the client doesn't like it. Like, it happens almost every day. People aren't deaf. We can hear when something sounds AI generated and won't engage with it. Who else? Let's see. Melissa Medina. She is a voice actress that was in Starfield. And she basically went saying, what a betrayal. I tried to inform SAG-AFTRA about their utter failure to make any real AI protections, and they instead got in bed with an AI company. Don't give your voice to this. SAG approved it, absolutely has no understanding of AI nor any intention to protect us from it. And then she made another tweet saying, to clarify, I don't mean to give your voice to this. Until you have clarity around your voice will be used, consent, compensation, how your data will be used by the site, how your data will be stored, and how your data can be removed if you want it to be.
Yes, and Replika is an Australian company, so they'd fall under the Australian laws as far as I'm aware. And I'm not actually sure how much impact that would have on them being able to store data on these voices.
Oh, man.
Because we don't have GDPR and stuff like that.
No.
Where you can request for your data to be deleted. And then they'll probably slip something into the contract that says that if you allow us to use your voice, then you can't request that we stop.
Mm. Yeah. What's going to... Okay. I'm gonna do a bit of a speech here, okay? So as I said, the AI is in every aspect of our lives, as BPM said, with the whole art and music and stuff. It entering into Hollywood has done an untold amount of damage with the number of strikes that's happened in protest to this. And as I said, with what's interesting is with the union being in bed with this AI company, the question is, everyone has to ask is, what damage is this going to entail in the future? Are we going to see voice actors walking away from the craft they love?
Probably, because the AI is coming for your jobs.
Yep, soon they'll be running the military, then we've got Skynet on our asses. That's always that's going to be a fun day.
Thankfully, most of the major robotics companies have declared that they won't sell to militaries. Unfortunately, that doesn't stop the militaries themselves creating their own robots.
Yeah, this is true.
Mm-hmm. And what's going to be even worse is how are the consumers going to be affected by this? Are we going to get an extra billing for the game that you love? Like, let's say, for example, you're the next Baldur's Gate, for example, Baldur's Gate 4. It's eight. Like, how much was Baldur's Gate 3?
Oh, $60 or something.
Okay, so let's say it was $60. Okay, with the use of AI, can you imagine the price of that game increasing?
Well, that's the thing. It won't decrease because even if you entirely generated a game using procedural generation and these AI voices and all of that, it would most likely be cheaper than paying actual humans.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to end up with a garbage game. Think of No Man's Sky when it launched. It was entirely procedurally generated.
That existed.
And it was garbage. Now, it's improved a lot, but that's because of the human touch.
Mm.
I don't think we're at the point yet where we can replace humans entirely, but we can cut out some humans. So we can slash the workforce and still produce the same level of quality using these tools.
Maybe.
Which means a whole bunch of people are going to be out of jobs.
Which will just rise into full-on dystopian lifestyle, which we're already halfway there.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that's what gets me worried about these new AI deals.
What's also... What's the other question we have to ask ourselves is, with a union doing this, how does it look for people that want to join unions now?
Well, this is just one union, and it's probably still a better deal than they would have gotten if they individually argued.
It's true, but I also could see distrust within the unions, which then will collapse society norm.
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple of tweets I saw going like, I attend my resignation from the SAG-AFTRA group. I'll find that tweet and I'll post it on the show notes. But yeah, there are some people really outraged, like, this union fought for us. Now it's selling out. What the hell, man? So it puts the SAG-AFTRA in a very, very compromising position.
Yeah, the union itself will probably survive. Although with the workforce being slashed, if they can cut out 90% of the workforce using this AI, only using actual human voice actors for hero characters, like the main characters, and having all your generic background NPCs dynamically generated and have them voiced by AI.
But wouldn't that could also sort of lose the agency, the immersion of the game if they're all just robotics?
Yeah. But that would also harm the union because there would be fewer voice actors who would want to be a member of the union because there aren't as many voice acting jobs going around.
Yep, and also it could actually, if it keeps going through like this, it could actually hit where gaming companies hurt the most in their wallets.
I think we're going to see some major societal change in the next decade.
Mm.
As we start to replace these jobs, we're starting with certain jobs and automating, and we've been doing it since the Industrial Revolution, really. but you automate away certain jobs. Those people then have to go and find another job or starve. The population keeps growing, so we need to find jobs for all these people. It's going to settle out within the next century. I think the estimate is that we'll settle out around 10 billion people. We'll peak at 12 and then fall back to 10.
Oh, that's if we don't get into crazy stuff like World War III or the
I think that's already happening at the moment or starting to happen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this Middle East stuff is not concerning at all.
Yeah, and you also got the Russia war still going on, though it's not in the headlines anymore.
But when we have all of our jobs automated by AI and nobody can get a job because it's all done by robots for cheaper than a human would do it, nobody can buy food because there's no money to go around. So we all starve to death.
Oh, no. We won't starve to death. There is
always long pig.
There is. Don't worry, Professor. There is always Soylent Green.
I think I'd rather stick to long pig.
Yeah, like Soylent Green is heavily processed. You want to go to the source and get your human meat all prepared as close to naturally as possible.
Hey,
you know, it's like having a Macca's burger versus steak.
Yeah.
You don't want your food to be heavily processed.
But ultimately, what's going to be the one thing we've forgotten about with this discussion is we've forgotten the fact that the gaming industry is a business at the end of the day. So it will look at any way how to gain profit.
But where can I get profit from if nobody has jobs?
I mean, where can I get profit when no one has jobs?
That's criminal. Criminal activity.
Nobody's going to buy your game if nobody can afford to eat.
Yeah, good point.
So that's why I think we're going to see some major societal change in the next couple of decades.
Yeah.
So ideally, we'd have a more equal society where all of our basic needs are cared for by robots. Realistically, we're going to have a dystopia.
Yeah, I just don't see it. Like, that could just end badly.
Uh-huh.
But I also have to look at the playing devil's advocate. There are positives to AI. If they are controlled and limited.
Oh yeah. I've seen on Instagram how people use AI just to create anime pictures, like just anime fan art using AI, and it looks beautiful.
Yeah, but they also could be argued that it's that AI program is stealing from other artists on the internet.
That's the problem.
The internet is a big pit of randomness.
Oh yeah, that's the problem. Like you've got some artists use AI as a way to refine their skill, but then you've got others that just use it for fun and stuff. But then you've got another bunch of people that just use it to make profit. And I think we're at the Wild West stage of AI at the moment. And I think with Professor, what he's saying in terms of we're seeing major societal changes. I think the regulation of AI is going to be part of that major societal change aspect.
I don't think so. I think it's too late to put the genie back in the bottle.
It's already being used in pretty much everything in one form or another.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like even look at your phones, like Siri or stuff. That is AI in a very limited form.
Makes sense, yeah.
And these sorts of AI that generate pictures or documents or voices, you can download your own copy and run them on your own home computer.
Yeah. Oh, you know
it
what?
Won't be as good as the ones running in the cloud.
Oh, you know what?
Only a matter of time.
Fair enough.
Go on, DJ.
I was going to say, you know what's going to be really, really interesting? You know those sites that do the whole you pay money to a voice actor to an actor or a voice actress and they do like an audio message to you, like a gift message.
File.
Like Cameo and
how
stuff.
Long until Cameo is just AI people? Like you could completely automate your workflow as a celebrity and just have it pump out automatically generated messages for your fans while you're sitting on the beach having a martini.
That would be that. Speaking of AI, another interesting one to mention to think about. So a while back, OnlyFans were also models were also afraid of the AI in terms of AI girlfriends. Now imagine AI voices in and you couple that with AI in the for OnlyFans. Oh boy, you're gonna get a whole new hornet's nest.
That is true.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Well, our third topic for tonight is the use of magic in medicine, or magicine, as they call it.
Ow.
Oh, shite.
It sounds like your doctor's just going to be like walking in with a magic wand and having a waving their stick around and saying magic words. But it's not that. It's actually what they call entertainment magic, using magicians who perform tricks on stage. What I have here is what I have here is an article, a review of several other papers, which suggests that you can use magic as a way to help people heal. And it starts back in 1915, where an author named Draklov wrote a book, Tricks for the Trenches and Wards, which involves simple magic tricks that could be used by nurses or soldiers during World War I.
Oh, looking in, this looks interesting.
You can go back in, like, the whole ideology that magic is a science that we don't understand was from Arthur C. Clarke back in what, something or other.
Yes, that's one of my favorite quotes.
But he's also a fiction writer, so, you know, it's 1917. I knew I'd get it somewhere.
Well, he wasn't just fiction. Didn't he have a ton of non-fiction papers published as well?
He was a science fiction writer, and also he was a futurist.
Okay, I must be thinking of someone else then. There's a particular sci-fi writer
Clark I'm talking about.
Yeah, there's a particular science fiction writer who has also published articles and papers in a whole bunch of different fields.
Well, Clark did do some nonfiction books as well, like space travel, futurism, are just some of them I can remember.
So he's famous for the 2001 A Space Odyssey. Okay.
He co-wrote that, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, he wrote the novelization to go with the movie.
Yeah.
And helped write the script, I think.
Yeah, the screenplay was written with Kubrick and Arthur C. Clarke, yep.
But the whole idea that magic is science, is I disagree, but that's like my own personal bias. Because back in the day, I was one of those little goth kids who practiced dark magic.
Oh, BPM, why?
Why? Well, I'm still goth. That's not going to change anytime soon. Why? Because I was always the butt end of jokes back in the day of high school. So of course, being the weirdo of the school, of course I go into weird stuff.
What's interesting about magic being a science? It just reminds me of those. I don't know whether you guys are familiar with Christian Science.
No, but then I ain't Christian either.
I know. So it's a similar thing with Christian Science. It basically is a sort of beliefs and practices that are associated with Church of Christ Scientist. That's a really weird name. It sounds like an oxymoron.
Well, they're pretty much falsifying the miracles of God, which is hilarious in my books.
Well, the thing is, you can be a Christian scientist, or you can be a Christian scientist. One is members of the Church of Christ scientist, and one is a Christian who happens to be a scientist.
Yeah, the normal one.
The normal one.
Yeah, the Christian Science Church, if I remember correctly, has a big focus on the power of prayer, which itself also has some evidence in literature for improved healing, which I think is probably down to knowing that you've got a support network. Mm. People with a support network are probably more likely to be motivated to heal and know that once they get out of hospital, then they're going to have help. Whereas if you don't have the support network and you're worried about, you know, coming out of hospital and having to immediately go back to cooking and cleaning, or you're worried about being homeless because you can't work, then you're going to lose a lot of energy worrying about that.
So it's basically manifestation.
Yeah. Like
yeah.
There's a lot of power in your brain over your body.
But with this magic with the magic and science part, it harkens back to the good old days of medieval England, when the knights of old were still around. Do you remember Merlin? Some guy with a beard that was doing magic, and
you mean the original Gandalf?
Yeah, the original Gandalf. Yeah. And how he was creating potions and stuff for example, give you invulnerabilities.
Yes, CB, that's the problem. That's not magic. That's alchemy.
Yeah. Well, it turns into alchemy, but it was initially a magic at the time.
Well, I think you're conflating the two types of magic here. Here in this paper, they're talking about entertainment magic, which is magic tricks and magic shows, the sort of thing you see someone do on stage. Yes,
stage magic. Okay, yeah.
Compared to magic where you actually believe that you're going to make a potion or cast a spell.
Yeah.
And in this case, it seems to be the theories in this paper suggest that magic forms a distraction, an outlet for humor, helps you to collaborate with others, and improves your self-esteem and sense of belonging.
But the whole thing of stage magic, it's skill of sleight of hand.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm kind of going to get roasted by everyone about this, because stage magic is not magic. It's sleight of hand and misdirection.
Yeah, you're right. There used to be shows talking about this, like Magic Tricks Revealed, for example, talking about this.
Like there was the whole TV series of The Masked Magician.
Oh, yeah. I used to love watching
that. Series. Yeah.
Yeah, I used to remember that.
If it's talking about the entertainment value of stage magic, then I can agree that is a technical form of science, so to speak, but it's more skill of the magician himself or herself in the the sneakiness and stealthiness of their sleight of hand and misdirection, which is what I like. That's why I respect stage magicians for their misdirection and their skills in their craft, though their self-promotion can be intolerable at times. I'm talking to you, Mr. Copperfield. I saw your show and I did not like all the self-promotion, but your match was fantastic.
Oh, what was it? Who was the other? And some of these magicians are they're really, really good in their craft. Like Chris Angel, for example.
Yeah, one of my biggest favorite illusionists. He's got great hair. Kidding. No, he's very good at his work.
Yeah.
I still want to see one of his shows live at some point when I can afford to go to Vegas.
So I want to know, this magic can be compared with other forms of distraction and collaboration. Well, and the study itself does compare it with other experiments in fields like using magic as a distraction for dental patients, comparing it to them distracting themselves with video games.
There's also the practice like of hypnotherapy, which is actually a practiced profession, which is interesting.
It's a thing. Hypnosis on stage is not like hypnotherapy, though.
It's pretty similar, I think. Manipulation of the electrons in the brain.
Yeah.
Minus the electric chair part. Joker would be disappointed.
Although I wonder how therapeutic would it be when you try and tell a patient, saying, okay, so spoiler alert, the rabbit was always in the hat.
Well, that's actually part of this. So part of it is that you first experience the magic. You see someone performing, and that gives you distraction and humor. Then you can learn the magic yourself, which activates your brain and boosts your self-esteem. You can perform it yourself for your social skills and collaboration. And then the final step in the process before looping back around to experience magic is enjoying the applause you get. So I think this is an actual, really interesting, multifaceted process that you can use to help boost someone's healing. And I'd be really excited to see more studies like this into other things that you can use to help people heal faster. Because psychosomatically, which is what this seems to be targeting, there's a lot of power going on in your brain that can hinder or help you heal when you're injured.
Actually, now I think about it, with you saying that, could you say magic is a form of placebo?
Yeah, that's another interesting field, because placebos are literally your body convincing itself that it's going to get better when there's no active ingredient. That's the sort of thing I'm talking about. And the really weird thing is, even knowing that you're taking a placebo can actually give you better outcomes.
So that means, hey, BPM, you'll be the magician. I'll give you a placebo. Go and perform a magic trick.
I don't know. That's the contest behind it, but
I thought my sleight of hand
is not that skillful.
No, I've tried learning some magic too, and I'm not that good at it.
Oh, I did look into doing stage magic. I was like, what, primary school? It wasn't bad. I did a decent card trick now and then, but it's pretty obvious the secret behind it. I wasn't good at hiding that.
So let's move on to our shout-outs for this week. On the 8th of January, 1994, the Russian cosmonaut Valery Polyakov left for the Mir space station. He would spend 437 days in space, setting a record for the longest consecutive space trip that still hasn't been broken.
That must be a very, very lonely experience.
Well, he would have had several other people in space with him at the time. And for context, the longest time spent in space across multiple missions was 747 days.
Well, the overall of going to space as an experience was that I think everyone wants to do it at some point.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, astronauts talk a big deal about how seeing Earth makes you realize that
how small and insignificant we are.
Yeah, and that we're not such a big deal, and we're all people.
I don't know. I think some of the politics do that pretty well as well. They see us as insignificant bugs.
Yeah, but it would be nice to see everyone go to space and have that experience.
Which, segueing back to AI, could be a possibility. Though then you've got problems with, HAL. Like, missions are failure because you people exist. Let's murder you all. That's the logical thing to do. Yay.
Oh, boy.
And our wacky movie this week, on the 6th of December 2010, Daybreakers came out, featuring Ethan Hawke. It's a vampire movie where the world has been taken over by vampires who have suddenly realized, hey, we've eaten everything we can eat and we're all going to starve to death. Which is rather problematic if you're a vampire and can't get blood.
There's always other vampires.
I'm not sure whether vampires can be cannibalistic, though.
In certain folklore, they can.
Yeah, it depends on the canon. The movie was filmed in Australia, well, in Brisbane specifically. You can actually see a few Brisbane landmarks around in the movie. I haven't seen the full movie, but I have seen a clip filmed in Central Station.
Nice.
And Ethan Hawke is quoted as saying that the movie is low art and completely unpretentious and silly, even though it tried to make a serious allegory that we're using our resources and trying to come up with substitutes instead of just getting off the resources. And he specifically mentions foreign humans, which is actually the basis for the economy of a lot of first world countries at the moment, that our population is shrinking because as countries become more developed, and people are more educated, the number of children they have goes down for a whole bunch of different reasons. So some countries would have a shrinking population if it wasn't for immigration, which is a problem when the economy is designed around infinite growth. Well, that's all we have for tonight. Thank you for joining us, BPM.
Pleasure.
DJ, where can they find us?
They can find us on Facebook, Instagram. I'm still going to call it Twitter, even if you force me to say X. You can also
take our Twitter from our cold, dead hands.
You can also find us on YouTube as well. And you can also find us on That's Not Canon, where we have a catalog of our old, old episodes. Good times.
So no OnlyFans yet. We'll work on that.
Oh, we will work on that.
Please no.
Oh, come on, Professor. You'll be a great you'll be a great stand-in.
Just use AI.
Well, I'm going to end this before we get any further off track.
Into the
we'll see you all next week.
Stay safe, take care of yourselves, and stay hydrated, everybody.
Peace, people of the internet.
Here we go.
Welcome to Books Boys! Every month, Dean and PJ tell you all about the books they've been reading and make some recommendations from our old favorites, plus surprise call-ins from authors to talk about the works that they're writing, original music, prize giveaways, and more. That's Books Boys on BooksBoys.com and all good podcatchers. Books Boys! Get it! Buy it! Books!
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.